Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. February 13th, 2019. I'd like to begin today by getting right into it with some breaking news, some stuff that I just saw. Interestingly, had to adjust the entire show because this is very important stuff. And it's something that I'm going to be talking about a lot. I actually believe we're going to be on Adam Green's show tonight to discuss this topic and much more. And this is just breaking right now before I went live. And the first one, and of course, sadly, I'm seeing this through mainstream media, but and their articles, as you will know, are ridiculously slanted one way or the other, but the information and where it's coming from is indeed true. This coming from The Hill, House passes U.S. to end U.S. military support for Saudi war in Yemen. Now, this is actually not the main focal point, but this is a very important story which leads into something much more nefarious, but it's still important. Now, this story, of course, as they, in the article, they say, the House on Wednesday easily passed a bill that would require President Trump to withdraw U.S. military support from the Saudi Arabia-led coalition in Yemen, which is ridiculous. It's I mean, that's just an aggressive attempt to manipulate the narrative. It's a U.S.-led coalition. That's what it's called. So to pretend that it's all of a sudden a Saudi-led coalition is just their attempt to continue to distance themselves from the horrendous actions taking place there. They're just somehow just passively involved with supporting them is slightly, no, complete lie. But in a 248 to 177 vote that largely fell along party lines, the House sent the War Powers Resolution to the Senate, where it's also expected to pass and confront Trump with the possibility of issuing the first veto of his presidency, which seems like, which he said he would do. But there's a part involved in this bill which seems like it may be some conflict for him, which we're getting to. Now, the resolution that the House passed would direct the president to withdraw U.S. military forces in or affecting Yemen within 30 days unless they are, of course, fighting al-Qaeda or associated forces, which is also patently stupid because we know that they're working with al-Qaeda in Yemen, as the Associated Press has reported. They're working with al-Qaeda in Syria, as we reported countless times. And the group that they're backing to basically put in power in Yemen, their government has people currently on the U.S. Treasury list for supporting terrorism. But the point is there's a loophole where they'll just say, oh, well, now we're fighting al-Qaeda, so we can continue doing what we've been doing this whole time, which is starve to death 20 million people for control of this area. Now, the White House has issued a veto threat against this entire topic, against the Yemen resolution in general. The statement of the administration policy called the resolution flawed because U.S. forces are not directly involved in hostilities in Yemen, which is also patently stupid and easy to verify. The U.S. troops are on the ground in Yemen. Mainstream media has reported that. But this is, again, their constant effort to rewrite history in real time. It's actually staggering, but people buy it if they're only reading places like The Hill. Now, the White House also warned the bill would harm bilateral relationships by defining hostilities as including defense cooperation, such as aerial fueling. You know, the thing that we just found out that we never charged the Saudis for this entire time, millions and even billions of dollars, and that we also just said they're no longer even doing? Yeah, but apparently that is a reason we need to keep this going. Think about the ridiculous there, the ridiculous nature of what he's saying there. The thing that we're no longer even doing, that they haven't paid us for, that still means we can't follow this resolution. It's just dumb. And it goes on to say, quote, our continued cooperation with regional partner nations allow the United States to support diplomatic negotiations to end the conflict, promote humanitarian access, mitigate civilian casualties, enhance efforts to recover United States hostages in Yemen, again, showing you that there are people on the ground. Funny how they can't even get their own narrative straight, and defeat terrorists who seek to harm the United States. You know, the terrorists that they're working with in Yemen, as the Associated Press reported. It's just, it takes some really, it's a mental gymnastics to try to agree with what they're saying here. Even in their own statements, they will contradict what they later say. And to pretend that they're mitigating civilian casualties, which implies that some are okay. Sure, they can kill some civilians, but we're going to do our best to lessen how many children they kill on a daily basis and promote humanitarian access by the blockade that you're working with, the blockade that's currently blocking humanitarian aid. It's just disconnected from reality, but these are the reasons why he's saying he might veto it. But this is where it gets really ridiculous. And I'm sure you're asking, Ryan, how could this get any more ridiculous? Well, the House has also unanimously approved a GOP-offered amendment in the bill about Yemen, saying that it is in the U.S. national security interest to combat anti-Semitism. Yeah, anti-Semitism. And you may be asking, what does that have in any way, shape, or form to do with a bill about Yemen? That's how our Congress works. Just like the Manager Wolves Act, where they snuck in a secret bill about Yemen. Just like the Farm Bill, where they snuck in something that allowed, that disallowed Congress from talking about Yemen until this new Congress. That's how these people work. So, and this is all happening on the very same day, mind you. The very same day they add this and slip it in, also from the Hill, House approves motion condemning anti-Semitism, and then right away pass this bill. Now, of course, it still has to pass the Senate and Trump's desk, but here's the conflict. As we know that Trump is aggressively pro-Israel, and so is the basically everyone in our Congress, so there's a conflict here, right? Because Trump's going to want to veto this because obviously the Yemen war is important. Killing all those people is clearly important to U.S. national security. So we have to wait and see how this pans out. I'm going to go ahead and argue that the aggressive influence that AIPAC and Israel has on Trump and the administration and all of our Congress is going to make put it above their desire to continue killing people in Yemen. But I think there's ties to the whole thing there. It all has to do with Israel's foreign policy in general. But interesting development here. Now, the House overwhelmingly approved a motion on Wednesday that adds language condemning anti-Semitism to a bill about Yemen that would cut off support for the, again, they claim, the Saudi-led military campaign in Yemen, which is just not true. The U.S.-led Saudi coalition. That's what they called it in the past, but now they're switching up their narrative. Now, the motion states that, quote, it is in the national interest of the United States to combat anti-Semitism at home and abroad. So here was, is this the new terrorism boogeyman? Now, any countries out there that dare speak out against Israel, because that's what they're conflating with anti-Semitism, which we're going to get to a lot more in the show today. All of a sudden now they need to be overthrown because they're against Israel. Think about that. Now, with an unfortunate rise, they continue to say, in anti-Semitism and attempts to delegitimize Israel. See the effort there? The United States House of Representatives must emphasize the importance of combating anti-Semitism and reject all movements that deny Israel's right to exist. Now, first of all, the absurd concept of conflating the idea of Israel as a state, which is illegitimate, occupying Palestine territory, which is simple history, ladies and gentlemen, just like they're occupying the Golan Heights and pretend they're not, except the entire international community says they are. It's not the same thing as hating Jewish people, which is the classic and very obtuse or rather acute concept of anti-Semitism. It's a much broader concept. You know, it's including Palestinians and all kinds of different people, but no, it's only Israel today, not even just Jewish people, but Israel. So you talk about anything the Israeli government is doing, anything that their lobbying groups are doing, now you're anti-Semitic. This is an aggressive agenda that has nothing to do with hate. No one here is condemning hate of any kind, of Israel, of any person, of any Jewish person or otherwise. I am not condemning hate. And sadly, there are people that will use this real effort to expose what they're trying to do and conflate these as a thin veneer for their hate for these people. And I don't associate with those people. No broad stroke concept should be applied to any race or ethnic or creed or anything. Black people, Jewish people, anything. No one's all one thing. But the reality is they're using this to try to conflate the two things. All the crimes, the war crimes and acts that Israel is doing is now off the table. It's very alarming. Now, if you think that I'm wrong in all the things I'm saying, let's get into this deeper, because this whole show is going to be focused on primarily this topic. Now, and please, if you disagree with me, please stay tuned, because there's a lot more information that I'm not going to just rant all off in the beginning of this show that applies to all these other articles we're going to get into that makes it very clear that what they're doing is an agenda that has nothing to do with protecting, you know, about hate speech or protecting a race of people. It has to do with covering for the acts of a government, their invasive, pervasive acts, trying to manipulate people. That has nothing to do with hate or race or anything. It has to do with an agenda, foreign policy, and you'll see why. Now, for the next article, a follow-up on something we just talked about, coming from Zero Hedge, Trump calls for Representative Omar to resign as conservatives fume over Democrat double standards. Now, personally, I'm not going to focus on the double standard aspect. I shouldn't say that I don't care, because it is obvious that there's double standards on both sides, mind you, and they're important to point out. But there's more about this that's really frustrating to realize, this story in general. So as I pointed out recently, those that may not be aware of the story that's everywhere, after Representative Omar pointed out the influence of AIPAC in the U.S. Congress. You know, a lobbying group that's paid to influence Congress. That's what they do. Once she pointed out that concept of that, the fact that they're trying to influence Congress as they're supposed to be doing, an opinion editor at the Jewish magazine, The Forward, tweeted saying that she'd, quote, love to know who Ilhan Omar thinks is paying American politicians to be pro-Israel, though I think I can guess. Omar responded simply by saying AIPAC, because that's what it is. Now, I'm not saying I don't agree with lobbying in general. I think all lobbyists are slimy, bribery. It's all of it's disgusting. It's legalized bribery in this country. But the reality is that lobbyist groups, their job is to influence policy. That's not a secret. That's what they do. But now talking about how Israel's lobby is trying to influence policy is now anti-Semitic. Can't talk about that. No, no, no. Conflating the idea with just all Jewish people. And of course, that's what she's trying, or the person's trying to do there. Though I think I can guess who you're talking about. We're talking about Israel. It's not a secret. And their lobbying group. Not Jewish people, but Israel's government. And as I said in a recent show, how is it anti-Semitic to point out that a lobbying group is doing what they're supposed to do? What they're paid to do? What this country runs on? Which I don't agree with, but it is the fact. From Rana from In The Now, she says, here is Chelsea Clinton accusing Ilhan Omar of anti-Semitism for critiquing AIPAC. You hear that? Being anti-AIPAC is now anti-Semitism. And that's the ridiculous concept we're getting at today. And now, conservatives from this article are fuming after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi refused to remove Representative Ilhan Omar from the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which I actually agree with, over a Sunday night tweet widely interpreted as anti-Semitic. Followed by criticism of her criticism of pro-Israel money in U.S. politics, which is a simple fact. Oh, Omar issued an apology, which we also covered, which I was kind of frustrated, but she did kind of stick it to it and say, look, you know, I actually do appreciate her willingness to be like, yeah, I'm trying to reflect on criticism, but I don't think that's what it was about at all. I think she was bending to pressure because this is the pressure that she's trying to call out. The overwhelming pressure from a lobby and the government that runs them to not be allowed to talk about this stuff, even though it's absolutely easy to verify. And she did apologize on Monday. And to which, of course, many compared to another topic, which is just kind of sidestepping the issue. Now, President Trump on Tuesday said to the White House reporters of Omar that, quote, I think she should resign, or either resign from Congress, or she should certainly resign from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And he added that her apology was lame. Yeah, like we haven't seen plenty of things you've said, lied, gone back on and apologized. It's just funny how people just, oh, well, she didn't mean what she said. Which is, you know, again, I could argue the same thing, but who knows that for sure? But I guess because Trump said it, then it's real. That she should resign for pointing out the stupidly obvious that AIPAC is influencing U.S. policy. It is one of the most feared and influential lobbying groups in this country. That's not anti-Semitic. That's just simple fact. Now, to push that even further, another great article from Mint Press News, Ilhan Omar was right. AIPAC influences Congress to the tune of $4 million annually, which I don't even think $4 million sounds like that much, but the reality is this is literally what they're pretending is not true. AIPAC uses money to influence what politicians do. It's pretty simple. And this is what we're now calling anti-Semitic. It is absolute, the stupidity of this, the obfuscation of this is staggering to me. And this, again, is an example of how powerful this group really is. To bend reality in order to suit what they, just to stop anybody from talking about what they don't want you talking about, which is their pervasive influence over more than just the United States, which, again, we'll get to more in a moment. But this story, it seems like all of Congress is now joining the chorus of detractors accusing Omar, Representative Omar, of anti-Semitism for, you know, correctly characterizing the business of lobbying. Representative Omar supports the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, the BDS movement, a nonviolent campaign going through the proper channels to economically pressure Israel into compliance with, you know, international and humanitarian law, like they try to push on everybody else, and to point out that Israel uses its lobbying groups to influence the outcome of U.S. policy in its favor. You know, what lobbying groups do. And it's not only being labeled anti-Semitic, but they're acting as if it's just simply not true. However, in fact, AIPAC spends more than $3.5 million a year to specifically influence Congress to be more favorable towards Israel. Verifiably so. And as the editor of Mint Press News points out in an excellent tweet, in 2018, AIPAC spent $4 million lobbying for our elected officials to support Israel, including quashing Americans' First Amendment rights to support BDS. And we could talk about the Strengthening the Middle East Act or the Anti-BDS Act, where they're literally trying to shut down your constitutional rights. Why do you think the first bill coming out of the Senate was all supporting Israel? Money for Jordan with supporting them, attacking Syria, giving them $38 billion a year, and, you know, stopping us from actually being able to boycott, taking away any avenue we may have to legally go about stopping them from committing war crimes. Yeah, that doesn't sound like influence to me. And she goes on to say, Ilhan Omar pointing out how Congress is bought to represent a foreign government over Americans isn't anti-Semitic. It's simply stating the facts. Now, really, I hope people can think about that. And there's really much more in this article. Much more in this article. I recommend, as all of them, you, as always, read them. But this article specifically, I hope you would read this further. There's a lot of important information in this article specifically. But now let's get into, you know, how it's happening, you know, in other places around the world. It's another example of just how powerful this pro-Israel these groups, the lobbyist groups in general, how really powerful they are, secretly attacking people supporting BDS, including students, lobbying countries to do what they want, and pointing out, you know, meddling in UK politics by Israel, not Jewish people, mind you, but Israel's government is now apparently also anti-Semitic, which I just continue to be baffled by. Coming from RT, how Human Rights Watch official accuses Israel of meddling in UK and gets called anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist. It's just, you can't make this stuff up. Accuses them of meddling in UK politics and gets called anti-Semitic. I mean, the disconnect here of how talking about a political action from a government is now anti-Semitic. Talking about the classic concept, which again is too isolated to one group, and that's not what anti-Semitism really is. If you actually look up the definition, but classically, it's about hate for Jewish people. That's what they want. That's what they push in your face, which does exist. Of course, it exists. There's hate for everybody, everywhere, of certain types of people. That's a reality today. But now they're trying to conflate it with anything Israel does, and that has been a long-standing effort. And I know people are beginning to recognize this. Now, Human Rights Watch Middle East Director Sarah Lee Winston. Now, funny again, Human Rights Watch, the group that both, you know, all these governments use when it suits their agenda. But now because they're actually beginning to point to the people that are doing bad things, they're attacking them. Like, they just kicked out the Human Rights Watch Director in general. This is the Human Rights Watch Director for Middle East, Sarah Lee Winston. And she's now under fire from Jewish organizations after simply claiming Israel is meddling in UK domestic politics, which we could very clearly see happening in this country, summoning a manufactured anti-Semitism crisis. Now, here's the interesting part. You can think about this, and if you just take it at face value, it sounds like she's pretending anti-Semitism doesn't exist. Thank you for the super chat. She's pretending that basically it's they're creating false hate acts and then using that to promote their agenda, which is really not what she's talking about. She's talking about what I'm talking about, that they're now conflating the idea of illegal actions by a government as anti-Semitism. They're manufacturing this anti-Semitism crisis as it applies to the actions that it shouldn't apply to, you know, like the crimes against Palestinians or the illegal actions that Israel takes in Syria. Oh, you attack Israel, you're anti-Semitic. And this is what she's really getting at. And of course, they just broad stroke it all and say, you're doing this, you're anti-Semitic. And this is how they manipulate the average people that don't really think about the depth to their propaganda, both the U.S. and other countries. Now, Winston, who is one of the public faces of Human Rights Watch and oversees the advocacy group's work in apparently 19 countries, includes Palestine and Israel, she tweeted herself by saying that, why is this Israel interference in domestic UK politics acceptable? It's a good question. Is it only a problem when Russia does it? See, these questions they'll never answer, right? Because just Russia bad guy, so it's okay. We can't allow bad guys to do bad things. Iran does bad things. That's what we hear all the time with no evidence. But Israel interferes in elections in UK and meddles in US politics, and it's okay. Because Israel, good guy. Russia, bad guy. It's the most absurd, hypocritical contradiction you could ever point out. But you're anti-Semitic if you do so. Like, take a moment and reflect on that. The broad scope of this. Now, this produced significant pushback from several, like usual, several prominent Jewish voices, including the U.S.-based activist NGO Stand With U.S., and an editor at the Jewish News, the prime newspaper of the community in the UK. All coming down on her for anti-Semitism, for pointing, how dare you point out that what the Israel's doing in other countries? Anti-Semitic. Now, are there people in the world who hate and commit violent acts rooted in racism? Of course there are. But what we are seeing now is the conflation between Israeli government actions and the Jewish people as a whole. Now, this would be like suggesting that by calling out crimes committed by the U.S. government, which are many, that you're now anti-Christian. While some who call out U.S. war crimes may also be anti-Christian, it does not mean that anyone pointing out their illegal actions is thereby a racist. This is absurd. Now, humanity needs to be able to address illegal human rights violating actions of any government. And to suggest that the Israeli government is just no longer allowed to be criticized under a shield of anti-Semitic accusations, even while it commits some of the most heinous and acknowledged war crimes of our time, is ludicrous. And shows us all the truth of just how much power and control both this government and its lobbying groups have over both UK politics and the US government. It is right in your face. And I'll be labeled anti-Semitic for simply pointing out the obvious. When I couldn't be farther from the truth, I get attacked from the farther people that will accuse me of not going hard enough against them. Because I refuse to broad stroke all Jewish people as one thing. Because that's not the case. It has to do with the Zionist-controlled government that is influencing more than we would like to believe. But I'll still be labeled anti-Semitic for even pointing it out. Now, here's another example of the double standard when it applies to Israel. This is an excellent tweet about the U.S. State Department, which is always a classic example that I've pointed out with countless people, and they're sidestepping the reality. As it says, Palladino at the U.S. State Department can never give a straight answer to any question concerning Israel's actions. Watch him struggle with questions about Israel throwing out the international observers from the city of Hebron in occupied Palestine. You know, violating the international community's decision in general. And if anybody else does it, yeah, then they're the bad guy. But not Israel.
Very quickly today, the United States blocked a statement at the United Nations Security Council that wanted to express regret for Israel throwing out international observers from the city of Hebron. And, you know, calling for all people to sort of tone down and so on. Why would you block such a statement? I mean, the observer mission, you were instrumental in creating that international observer mission in Hebron back in the 90s when it was so volatile.
The 1997 agreement on the temporary international presence in the city of Hebron, clearly states that the consent of both the Israelis and the Palestinians is required in order to extend the mandate and presence of the TIPH. Furthermore, Oslo II and Hebron Protocol of 1997 also stated that the agreement from both sides was necessary for that to continue.
But don't you like to see some international presence in Hebron because it is a point of conflict and, you know, flashpoint.
Regardless of whether one agrees or disagrees with the Israeli decision not to renew, it would be inaccurate to accuse Israel of not having the right to make this decision under the 1997 agreement. This is a sovereign decision, and it's the right of either party to make that agreement.
Please. Are you disappointed, though? I mean, it's their right to do it, but you guys take positions and stances on sovereign decisions by foreign governments every day, kind of like the way you did yesterday with Germany and its extradition. So, it seems as though you're blocking of this statement at the Security Council would suggest that you're not disappointed, and in fact, you're in favor of it. You said whether you agree or disagree with the Israelis' decision, well, do you agree or do you disagree with it?
I have nothing further on that other than to say that it is this is in accordance with the agreement itself. This was something that is the right of either party to do, and that was a sovereign decision that was made. Nothing further on that subject.
Yeah, just stop asking me questions that I'm not going to answer because I won't point out that we have a bias towards Israel. Just stop asking my questions. Oh, Matt Lee, I wish I could see him from Associated Press. I wish I could see him at some White House press briefings. It's just, he always calling them out on their BS. And, you know, it's just funny to see them squirm when they try to say something very obvious that doesn't go along with the narrative. Because most of them don't have the courage to actually ask the right questions. Because you ask the right questions, very easy right questions, their house of cards comes falling apart, as it always does. It's actually really funny, but it's just disgusting to see these people and the way that they act. Now, to end today, I leave you with one more great video that makes light of in a humorous way, of a very real issue that we're talking about today. That's being covered up by basically slandering anyone who addresses it as, you know, a racist, a bigot, for even talking about it. So thank you for tuning in today. Please be sure and subscribe and share the link if you believe in what I'm trying to accomplish here. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
As we gather here, three evolving threats. Iran's continued aggression, a rising tide of extremism across a wide arc of instability, and the growing effort to delegitimize Israel on the world stage.
I believe that when any organization delegitimizes Israel, we must stand up and speak out for Israel to be treated equally.
There's a campaign to delegitimize Israel, and that all flows from the same cancerous ideologies.
We must continue to stand firm against the profoundly biased campaign to delegitimize the state of Israel.
When the UN makes statements, particularly the Human Rights Council, we have to stand up to them.
So we'll continue to stand against the biased resolutions and attempts to delegitimize Israel at the United Nations.
If the Palestinians try to push through a United Nations resolution to unilaterally declare Palestinian statehood, America will veto that resolution.
And for the sake of the Israeli people, we as a nation cannot support any measures or any agenda that gives this terrorist organization harbor or support, that gives this terrorist organization any advantage.
The United Nations is not a friend of democracy. It's not a friend to freedom. It's not a friend even to the United States of America, where, as you know, it has its home. And it surely is not a friend to Israel.
While I cannot boast of Jewish grandparents, as other speakers have and will, and how fortunate they are, I do have my father's devotion and my brother's devotion to the cause, which is part of our family tradition. And I do have to boast of my Jewish grandchildren. I think I have the most of anyone in Congress. I'm not quite sure, but they're adorable.